Before we dive into the talk, I would first like to ask how many of you have ever worked on, let's say, a document and you've ignored the battery warnings for the past hour when suddenly your battery dies and you realize the last time you saved was about an hour ago and that hour is gone. Well, it's happened to me and it's very annoying. So I hope this work can help alleviate this issue and it can prove useful not just for programmers but for regular computer users in the future. With that out of the way, let's officially begin. Right, so first let's get our definitions out of the way. What is persistence? Academically, it's defined as the period of time during which an object is usable. And since we're dealing with operating systems and kernels here, what we mean by object can basically be any state of a program or, like, for example, variables, expressions, etc. And what we want to persist is to persist exactly what I mentioned in my example. System crashes, system outages that happen unexpectedly. In short, your programs should not fear death. Now, this is not a new topic. It's been around in academia for the past couple decades. And there are some traditional ways that traditional operating systems such as Linux and Windows, for example, they do have some persistence mechanisms. And I'm sure you're all familiar with them. Files. The problem with files is that the persistence mechanism is the user space application is responsible for the persistence mechanism. It has to serialize the data it wants to persist. It has to create the file, write to it, update to it, etc., etc. Persistence is in the hand of the application, right? So let me introduce to you something you may not be familiar with, PhantomOS. What is it? It's a non-Linux operating system offering orthogonal persistence. Actually, PhantomOS has a new methodology in mind. It wants to do away with files as a persistence mechanisms. A big caveat here in terms of the user space programs. You'll see why in a bit. But it wants to do away with files, in short. I'll explain how it does so. But as you can see here, I've highlighted a term. Orthogonality, which you may not be familiar with, but you will be shortly. So orthogonality refers to these three concepts. Independence, which states that all data should be treated the same, no matter how long the data lives for. The data type should not infer anything about the persistence either, which is what column 2 and column 3 state. Which you can read here. But in short, orthogonal persistence refers to the fact that persistence is in the hand of the kernel, not in the hands of the user space program. The programmer should only worry about getting the business logic out, no need to worry about saving data. In short, in traditional systems, system outages are a fault state. In PhantomOS, it's just regular day life. Now, I'm sure you're curious, how does PhantomOS achieve this new type of persistence? Well, if you've played a video game in the past 20 or so years, you know that most games have some sort of checkpoint mechanism, and it's much the same here. Instead of calling it checkpoints, we call them snapshots. Let's take a pause on that for a second. All user space programs are compiled to run on the Phantom virtual machine, which is a language virtual machine, much like JVM, the Java Virtual Machine. And it has strong typization, which is backed up by memory protections. Now, when the different user space programs run, they all run inside one singular address space, which is shared by all programs. So now, the snapshot mechanism. Please note that this is all done asynchronously to the running programs. So the user space programs are interrupted very minimally for performance reasons. So first, we want to freeze the persistent address space. And to enable this to be done asynchronously, we use a copy-on-write mechanism. Once we have frozen the address space, we copy all the data to disk in what's known as a superblock. And then we unfreeze the persistent address space. And of course, we can then do the inverse to recover the data back from the superblock after the system outage. Now, this way of doing the snapshot is fast, and it's very easy to implement from a developer perspective. However, what happens if your disk storage gets corrupted? Well, you're cooked, right? You don't have any way to recover the data. It's corrupted. And I hear you thinking, wouldn't it be nice to have an abstraction layer such as a file system that can handle this sort of recovery? Well, that's exactly what the new snapshot mechanism aims to do by integrating a file system as part of the snapshot mechanism. Now, I know how in the first part of the presentation I was bashing against files. However, this file system is just a way to manage the data storage. It has no implications for the user space programs. And by using the file system, we can have retention and redundancy policies, which I'll go on after in a bit. We added pausable snapshots and multiple generations of snapshots, which I'll cover later. Right, a brief caveat. Phantom OS was ported to the Gnode framework by a student working on this before me. This enabled us to use Gnode's ecosystem of drivers and also to utilize the microkernel approach and configurable security policies and capabilities. And of course, one such project in the Gnode ecosystem is LWEXT4, developed by Joseph, which proved invaluable in this work. So, just to give you a brief overview of what's going on under the hood, we have userland, which lives on top of the persistent address space. Then we have Gnode running, backing everything up. And we have the new snapshot mechanism running as a separate Gnode component. Now, this has isolation advantages, and it also allows us to manage snapshots from many different components and to also use the snapshot mechanisms in other Gnode projects. Oops. Right, so how does this new snapshot mechanism work? Well, let's start from the basics again. You have your one singular persistent address space on which every single program lives. And of course, it's split up into virtual memory pages. So the first step would be to label all of these pages, right? I'll refer to these labels as snapper identifiers. And so let's take a snapshot of the persistent address space, but instead of saving the raw data into disk, let's just save it into files, into a file system, and let's give it some sort of directory hierarchy. The snapshot data will be stored in the black files, which I will refer to as snapshot files. And please note that the labels on the pictures here do not necessarily correspond to snapper identifiers. They're just locations in this directory hierarchy. And the mapping between the snapper identifiers and the paths are managed by the white files, which you can see over there, by the archive file. Now, OK, this is all well and good. We take one snapshot. We take another snapshot. However, while this may be good in terms of redundancy, let's say, yes, we took a snapshot here. We have some data stored here. And then maybe we have the same data because it didn't change between the snapshots. It's still saved here. We have the same file storing the same data. Now, this, again, it's good for redundancy, but in terms of disk storage efficiency, it's suboptimal. So, right, what do we do when we have the same file? Well, we create a link, right? We build the new generations on top of previous ones, and we just link back to older versions that contain the same snapshot data. You can think of this link as a hard link. However, it's not implemented as a hard link, despite my best efforts, because it's not supported in Gnode. So this linking capability is done via mappings in the archive file and reference counting in the file themselves. This is the data layout of the snapshot file. We have some version of the snapper mechanism, a hash, which stores the integrity of the version and the data, and the reference count to manage linking. And the archive file, much very similar. We have a version, a hash, which hashes the n in the data. The n refers to how many mappings we have in each archive file, and data are the actual key value pairs of snapper identifiers and snapshot file paths. Right, so benchmarks are our favorite topic. Let's get into it. Here are the boring specs. Ooh, okay, so it doesn't do very well. And no, this is not a mistake in the graph. This is the original superblock approach. As you can see, it's quite fast compared to our brute implementation. It takes 43 seconds. Now, it's important to note that these 43 seconds are not interrupting the user space programs. They're running just fine. This 43 seconds basically stops us from taking a new snapshot within this time frame. So we have to wait until this is over, until we can take it. The snapshot itself is synchronous between different snapshots. And also, we have a wider range where we can have a power outage during the snapshot, and we can lose the data that we're trying to save, which is not good. So let's optimize. We have our snapshot file, which stores some data, which is referred to by the snapper identifier, one-to-one mapping. Why don't we squeeze more virtual memory pages into this in order to reduce the I/O workload? So that's what we did. We grouped a bunch of memory pages and made it so that all the data is backed into one snapshot file. Just a quick note, this optimization is done on PhantomOS. It's not managed by the snapper mechanism, since we want to keep the snapshot mechanism flexible to capture whatever the client component wants to give it. So again, this is on PhantomOS. And with this, we can see drastic performance improvements, which level out about 128 pages per snapshot file, and it takes around 1 to 2 seconds. Again, much slower than the original, but we have fault tolerance. So, yes, and one quick thing to mention here, since we are grouping a lot of pages into one snapshot file, if we do change, if a virtual memory page changes its content, then we have to update. We can't just link to a previous snapshot file, right, in the previous generation. We have to basically create a new snapshot file, and that's what you can see here. For example, in the last column, we are changing almost 25% of our snapshot files every new generation. And if we have one virtual memory page, we change only the ones that we need to change effectively. And how you can use and configure this, you can configure the redundancy levels, which refer to after how many generations do you want to start making redundant copies? Because if you just have links back to older generations and you something happens to that old generation, you lose the data. So this redundancy basically creates copies after a certain amount of generations. And you can configure the amount of snapshots you want to have at all times, the expiration date, some other stuff. Look at the GitHub for more. And some fault tolerance, frequently asked questions. What happens if the system shuts down during the snapshot process and it corrupts the file system? Well, since we are using the file system, we can benefit from the utilities around it. So you can just use FSCK to just fix your system. However, this leads to the second question. After using this tool, we had corrupted data. Okay, we recovered the file system, but that data is still corrupted and it invalidates the hashes. So unfortunately, you will have to go into the file system, remove the problematic files to just get rid of the warnings. But then your system should recover the non-problematic pages. Now, towards the end of the talk, I would like to mention some other developments in the PhantomOS world, especially these two projects done by students prior to me. We have the introduction of a WASM runtime in order to increase support for more programming languages. And we also have a way to restore connections based for example, TCP, if one machine dies, if it's before a certain timeout, you can still recover the connection. However, with this persistent networking work, you can restore the connection if both machines die, and you can restore the connection. Now, let's see a demo of PhantomOS using this new mechanism. So here we start the operating system. As you can see, we have a weather app displaying some sort of state. So it's making some progress. And we started the snapshot. It committed here. So now if the system crashes, just remember where the graph is. OK, the system crashed. So let's see if we recover the state. Here we reboot. Recovering. And there you go. Right? Like, yeah, you didn't lose anything. No files needed that you know of. It's all managed by the kernel. You didn't lose any of your work. So to conclude, we covered the question of traditional persistence mechanisms and whether they are outdated or not. Of course, we covered how PhantomOS used to take snapshots of the data, as well as the newer alternative. Whether it's better or not, I leave that up to you. I do want to mention that this work is experimental and not ready for production use, but I think it's a cool concept. And of course, here are some references in case you're interested. Oh yeah, also PhantomOS was present in, had a talk in 2020, so if you want to go check that out, please do. And I leave the floor up to any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Great talk. In one of your slides, you mentioned that your hashes are just 4 bytes wide. Isn't that a little bit narrow?
Yes.
And apparently, it's a 32-bit hash that isn't really collision-free, right?
Yes. So that's that. Yeah. That's a great question. So yeah, to restate the question, I am using hashes that are, let's say, not the best for error detection, since they're not really collision-free, and it's restricted to 4 bytes. Of course, this is very. I'll just go back to the slide. For instance, this. This is still in development, so yes, it could be expanded to larger, but I prioritized quickness. So those were the trade-offs I had in mind. And also the hash is mainly to keep track of whether the state has changed, if that makes sense. So
What happens if you actually run into a collision? Would it ruin your snapshot?
Or? Yeah, it would just create a new snapshot file because once this is once we detect an erroneous hash because the data doesn't match, or if it matches, then you would reuse some state, which is not the best, but yeah, this should probably be changed. Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks for the talk. How does your work relate to some of the hardware advances like non-volatile random access memory that might actually sort of render your work obsolete? I don't know.
I haven't looked into that, but...
Well, it's basically RAM that stays persistent even if you turn it off.
Ah, okay, yeah, this works... if this works for, not normal hardware, but like for traditional RAM. Obviously, non-volatile memory would be great to have.
You can buy it even nowadays.
Yes.
It's more expensive, but you can actually.
Yeah. I mean,
just for that, you might still use it, use your mechanism for having multiple snapshots and basically use the NVRAM as an accelerator.
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah, I'll look into it. But of course, yeah. This if it's non-volatile, but then we don't need to manage the snapshots, right? Like if it's non-volatile, it will just persist.
For tolerance, I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah.
Well, definitely. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Just look into it and see if it does not make your work sort of obsolete.
Okay.
Another question, very quickly. So, how does this, what's the lineage between the original quote-unquote Phantom OS and this one? It's really just a continuation, replacement, how would you call it?
It's mainly worked on by students, so it's just exploring a new direction, building on top of the microkernel capabilities that Gnode provides. In my opinion, it would be great if that would be the mainstream, but the developer, there's also a separate Phantom OS branch, which is just purely Phantom OS. However, this has the benefits of like network using the networking stack of Gnode, so yeah.
So the original one is still being developed?
Yes.
Okay,
thanks. Let's go, question from the back.
So I remember the original Phantom OS talk.
Okay. Yep.
Like it's huge. But here you show that you could run multiple Phantom OS instances, right? Mm-hmm. So in practical terms, what is kind of the granularity of a Phantom OS system? Like would you put a browser in one Phantom OS and then run other applications in a different instance or put them all in one?
Okay, so the question was, could we have more than one Phantom OS instances and would we use the different instances for different apps? Is that correct?
Yeah.
From what I've read and what I've worked on, it's under the assumption that it's one Phantom OS instance. And while Gnode, I guess, I don't want to say, like, it seems like you promote like having different containers for different, different protection domains for different applications. On Phantom OS, you really want to, it's designed to run all your programs for this instance. While yes, maybe you could find a use case for having different PhantomOS instances, they wouldn't be able to communicate within one with each other. They'll have to be managed separately. But I guess you could then link it back to this snapper mechanism, which is running in its own, as its own server to manage all of your instances. So I could see it being used like you suggested. Yep.
I have a question. So if your premise is to get rid of the file system for applications, right?
Yep.
And the file system is not only used for persistence, but also for communication in a sense, right? Where you, mm-hmm. You open an editor, write a C file, and compile it with a different program, mm-hmm. which is a compiler. So how does that fit into your concept, basically, that you're also using the file system for purposes other than just, you know, persistence?
Yeah, so the question was, how do we... files are not only used for persistence, they're also used for message passing. And how does PhantomOS accommodate for that? Well, PhantomOS doesn't, it still wants to support files. However, it doesn't want to, it promotes writing programs that don't depend on files for persistence. Mainly, that's its main like gripe with it. I guess you could, it still supports files for, you can still use files for persistence. But that's not what it promotes. So you could use it for message passing. Files, yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Assuming you are doing the structure of all running the file system, have you considered or have you tried to play with the approach that you are actually doing snapshot of only the apps that you are interested? Is that even possible?
So the question was, can you take snapshots of just certain processes that you're interested in? That's a very interesting topic, one which I really want to look into. However, I haven't looked into it yet since this is all running into, all the processes are running on a single persistent address space, which is, again, it uses strong typization by the virtual machine. So looking through the code base, I couldn't really discern which data was used for which file. Again, more research is needed in that area, but it's a really cool concept because currently, when it freezes, it has the snapshot mechanism has to go through all of the pages, and it would be really cool if you could go through only a certain region, let's say, and then pause that, unpause another one. So, yeah.
Do you have the connection between, let's say, the process ID and the application? Because then if you don't have, let's say, the context, mm-hmm. and you see, yeah, this is the process, so the kernel can simply kill the app or remove the app from their context, because assuming mm-hmm. you need to store all kernel information about the processes and so on. So yeah. That was when I was, let's say, thinking about this, that I think it's doable. So that's
what I asked. I haven't looked into the...
Yeah, all the time.
If you have the different time snapshot and you want to restore them, then you will have put the application will not correspond to each other.
Yeah, that is definitely possible. Yeah.
Thanks, which is probably prevent from this
idea. That's very true.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
You use one persistent address space for all applications.
Yeah.
Is it also the case for the virtual memory address space?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So basically, the browser process could access memory from the web app in that example.
There are some memory protections in place. I haven't looked into the code of the PVM, so I can't answer in a detailed way. But I've read that there are memory protections, and that's as far as my knowledge extends in that area.
If you wouldn't have memory protections, you could use a communication model just like a Smalltalk VM did back in the day, the 80s, where you could have global objects that could be accessible from each other object.
Yeah. I assume there is some sort of protection, but again, I can't answer you with 100% certainty.
Thanks.
Yeah?
It sounds like when you take a snapshot, you have to freeze everything and scan every page.
Mm-hmm.
Have you experimented with write protecting pages so that you can actually see which ones are being modified?
That's exactly what it does, because it's a copy on write. So it sets all the pages to read only. And then all the new pages that happen during the snapshot process. Yes.
Time's up.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you again.
Thank you.